Right, welcome back to Lost in the Middle. I'm here with a very good friend of mine, Big Tim Elliott, or just Tim, I don't know, any of those. I've known Tim for quite some time, definitely one of the smartest, most thoughtful people I know. And I thought, actually, within this process of trying to work out if there's a thing in this Lost in the Middle thing, Tim would be a brilliant guy to speak to. So, hello, Tim.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I find this like weird as mates when actually you suddenly start to go, ah, Mr. Elliott, how are you?
See, I refer, like, when you call people you know well and care about by their first name,
yeah,
weird. Like, yes. Like other half, I always remember, like, why did you call me Tim? What, like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't answer to my full name. Who uses my name? Like, it's an odd situation.
We've had to sort of go back a step here because Amy's nicknames have got so wildly exotic and complicated and sort of multifacetonal. I'm now having to go back to call it, yes, Amy. And it just feels weird. It just feels weird. But yeah, mate, well, look, tell us, give us the 2-minute skinny on you, just so, you know, listeners kind of know a bit about where you are and where you may or may not fit into all of this.
Yeah, good question. So I'm just a guy, really. I've spent most of my life, well, early life, probably travelling. I travelled around between 18 and 27. I didn't have a real job, let's say, till I was 27. And then fell into marketing, like, yes, everybody does, who doesn't really know what else to do with their life. It's either sales or marketing.
Yes.
And I didn't really like dealing with people enough, so marketing it was. But, like, did all right at it. Ended up pretty good. Ran a couple of agencies, had a couple of CMO roles. That went quite well. Joined the Alcoholics Anonymous version of marketers. Like, I'm a former marketer. I'm a recovering marketer. I don't do it now. I still, like, crave a bit of it occasionally, a bit like an alcoholic would. But I'm definitely not allowed to touch it because gone past that point. So now I fill my time in a kind of a multitude of ways. It's always difficult to answer this, who are you, what do you do kind of question. So I have a couple of roles in exec education teams in universities, looking at things like strategy, innovation, sustainability, growth stuff. I do some mentoring, which is lovely, which is pretty much a conversation between two people to help them get unstuck, which is quite apt. And I try and spend as much time running as humanly possible to try and get this 47-year-old, slightly pear-shaped man into an endurance athlete.
I'd never have you slightly pear-shaped.
Maybe fully pear-shaped.
Pear, not one of the other ones that I can't remember. And just so you're sort of 47, what are you, family guy? What, you know, give us
I've got a kid, 16. It's marvellous. Mia, she's just joined an apprenticeship, which seems to have transformed her into a proper adult. Now she asks me about inflation rates instead of jigsaws, which I'm a bit confused about, but that's fine. Small family, if I'm honest. Yeah. But, you know, been through some, as yourself, lost some parental figures earlier on. One ages ago, 18, my mum and my dad last year. So fly pretty solo, if I'm honest. But we've always had a, like, there's never been anything wrong, but, like, we're not one of those families who hang around and go around all the time. We've just never, we've always had independent parts and then going, oh God, it's Christmas, we better go around to my sister's. You know, not for any malice reason. We're just not, there's just not, just not there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I get that. Yeah. I think there's a whole podcast to be done on families and,
super tricky.
Really interesting. Really, you look at, you know, kind of families come together, but, you know, that is one for another day. But cool. Well, look, I'll tell you what, mate, look, you probably know a bit why we're here. I have this thought. I've come to this thought, you know, various stuff that I've read and looked and personally experienced, and that's the thing, that people, and I don't know yet, but I'm thinking, I think particularly blokes, now that may or may not be right, again, it's something to kind of look at as I go through this, I think you get to an age about our age, that sort of mid 40s, where you end up, and I'm sort of coining it as this, as sort of lost in the middle, that actually nothing's particularly wrong. You know, there's no real dissatisfaction or unhappiness, you know, and this is a part of it. I'm really trying to find the word for this and kind of came up with, you know, dissatisfaction, but even that has the connotations to it. And it's not, it's almost like the opposite, but without being the opposite. So it's, you know, they're not satisfied, but they're not dissatisfied. They're not, you know, they're content, but they're not content. And this is really kind of where I'm trying to get, because I think there is this stage where blokes in particular kind of go through this stuckness. And again, it's one of those things, it's, you know, it's not a particularly bad thing, but actually I think it could be so much more. Life could be so much more. People can do so much more. I look at my own sort of experience in this and think, well, okay, yeah, I sort of got to that stage and maybe I didn't notice it, but I wanted to do more things. And it wasn't kind of have more things. It just, like, I'm getting older. Life can give me more, but what? And it is that what, how, who, all that kind of other stuff. And that's really kind of why I asked you to come and talk to me today. Now, you know, I suppose for my own sort of sanity and to not make this the shortest podcast in podcastular history, like, is that thing that's obviously beautifully described, is that thing something that resonates with you?
Yeah, it totally is. It totally is. And I'm actually not 47. I don't know why I said that. 46. 47 in June. Gave myself
the worst lie
a bit of time.
Ever, yeah.
But since about probably early 40s, let's say 42-ish, right, I've been doing this work. I've had that feeling. Like, I've 100% hands up been lost. I am 98% pretty sure I'm a good 40% still lost. But
yes,
I think being conscious of that, being aware of that and going, oh, right, there's something missing, not quite right, changing, insert word that fits in your life, is a big piece of the work. Because a lot of people I see show symptoms of being lost without acknowledging a loss. Because on paper, everything looks cool. Like, good job, good house, 3.5 kids, 4 dogs. Do you know what? Like, ticking the boxes of societal expectations, right? But not feeling it. And I'm not saying they like the family and stuff. Do you know what? I'm not saying any of that.
Yeah.
But there's something missing for them. Like, for them as an individual. Because all families are a collection of individuals that are tied together by some kind of relationship, right? In adults' way, it's kind of a choice. You choose your partner, that sort of thing. But, you know, you are a set of individuals. Yes, there's this other connection. But I see people struggling with that, like, just not realising. And I can see it because I can now see it.
You
know what I mean? Like, it's looking through the world through a different lens. And actually now, on a contrary to the feeling lost, confusion, kind of negative connotations it can have, I actually try and get lost a little bit on purpose.
Okay.
Right? Because I think we need the time and the space to explore a little bit ourselves, right? Especially after so much time of adult life. Like I said, like everybody has kids at different age. My 16, she lives with a mum anyway, so she's never a full-time dad, if you know what I mean. But there's definitely phases of life, right, or eras, where you end up asking yourself some form of the question, what's next? Now, I definitely did this, right? This is where my slightly humorous thing of I don't do marketing anymore that I mentioned in the intro came up. But I got to a point and went, oh, hold on a second. None of this stuff that I've done for the last 23 years matters. Right. Tricky. I really want to, like, it doesn't mean I wasn't good at it. It doesn't mean it wasn't useful. But if I wouldn't have done it, right, then would they just got somebody else to do it? It didn't really matter. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, yes, it earned money. Yes, it was useful. But I was just like, oh, I can't carry on doing stuff that doesn't matter. And I think it's more a change within me that has happened, maybe a change of perspective, a different level of knowledge, a different level of personal development. I've always been a bit of a personal development geek, and I think people who are into personal development will suffer more with this change thing because we learn more and we have a wider perspective. I call it in my journals the 50p perspective. So if you imagine a 50p, I think some people have maybe a 10p perspective, which is just one and it goes round, or maybe a bit of a square, but a 50p, people have different perspectives on this situation that they're in, right? I like an analogy, call it 50p perspective. But I know what a few of those things are, right? I know trail running for me is a big part of it. So some form of movement, especially outside, especially not to sound like a loner weirdo, but like solitude is a big part of that for me. Like I like the solitude of it, of a long distance run. And movement creates positive energy. Yes, you get tired, but it gives you a better energy if you move regularly, if you're one of those people. So that is, mate, I'm a big advocate of continual learning, like being a forever student. And I like learning different things. Like, for example, I've recently in the past year become a meditation and a breathwork instructor, not to deliver courses to people, but because I think it adds into my running. Like I find it very mindful. I think they're tools that I can use to have a better experience in there.
Yeah.
Right. So I think learning is there for me, and then seeking out the opportunity to teach, like to be useful and kind, which is why I love my roles at the university, which is why I enjoy doing podcasts and speaking opportunities when they roll past my window. But just like mentoring conversations, the conversations with good people. I've got, as you're in it, a lovely kind of inner circle we have of friends, yes. You know, and the conversations are very good. But seeking opportunities to teach that thing, those three things, like, are fundamental to who I am at this point. But that's only three sides of a 50p, right? And to be whole, I feel I have the opportunity, or I should give myself the chance to be free to explore these things. So to be lost on purpose, to poke the edges, to try something a bit new and then go, ah, that's not for me. Thank you very much.
That's really interesting. This try something new thing. My starting point for all of this was, I think I want to help people into adventure. Now, I don't mean adventure here, and this is part of the kind of trickiness of definition. You know, I don't mean adventure is going to the North Pole. I don't, you know, it's not even kind of going and, you know, just doing 100 miles on the bike or something. I love to long distance cycle. It's more in that to do something that you wouldn't normally do. And I think it's interesting. I'll come back to that. But I just want to go back to something you said there. Can you, because there's a couple of things, like, can you pinpoint when you transitioned from life is great as a marketer to that? Because you mentioned actually, oh, everyone's struggling with this. Not everyone, lots of people are struggling with it, or kind of words to that effect. And I just wonder if actually people aren't struggling with it because they don't know it. They don't think about it. And I'm wondering, is there, you know, can you look at a time where, because you know, for a long time that I've known you, you've been, again, you know, successful, happy, enjoying marketer guy. And I just wonder, can you think of a time where actually, not that necessarily stopped, but you ended up in that, what else is there?
And I'm, put my hand up, like, super privileged to have never been massively unhappy. Like, I've always had an element of things have been all right, even the you know, a bit roller coastery, it's life, right? But not by any point at a crisis, let's say.
Yeah.
But there, in the theory of this sort of thing of personal change, they're called moments of clarity or crucible moments. A mate of mine, Sarah Rosentula, has wrote a book about crucible moments. Very interesting. But these happen anyway, right, in our lives. They're like trigger moments, right? Trigger points. And the thing about these happen naturally in our life. These occur occasionally where there is an opportunity to change or do something different. But you have to grasp the opportunity. If you let it pop off or you half-ass grasping at it,
Yeah.
it goes through your fingers, right? And it's sorry for all the analogies, people, but you'll get it in the end. But there's you have to be aware enough to grasp the opportunity. And there's lots of like society and the systems and life in general that we live well, in this country, in the UK, Shepherd is not here, is designed to make us conform, right? Everybody wants a 9-to-5 that earns jobs, go out, spend money, do things, right? It's
Yeah.
cyclical. Not getting into that system change situation, but like the world would operate amazingly if everybody was pretty much the same. Like, because that's what the systems are designed to do, right? Work, like, and it's all of the things. So there's forces against this sort of thing. And that, all that stuff that is expected of us by society, by family members, by peers, by books, by gurus, do you know what I mean? Is causes a thing that a phrase that it like there's two things that bimbling a little bit, but I'll come back to it. There's two things that are the biggest inhibitors of people grabbing this opportunity, these crucible moments of being aware of them. As I see it, I am not qualified in this, but from my lived experience. And one is uncertainty, because people do not act when they're uncertain about a thing. You can look at my background as Paul is working with business and stuff, and businesses stop making decisions when they're uncertain. It's the same in communities, it's the same in families, right? You batten down the hatches, you go, just going to wait because don't know what's going to happen here, which is a kind of a risk thing. And then there's fear. Right. And I'm not going woo-woo into fear, but there was a phrase that I learned a year or so ago, and it's been rattling around my head. And it's just one of those things that you hear and you go, oh my God, that's so true. Like, people don't make decisions based on practicality, fear disguised as practicality. Right. And practicality and uncertainty are the two inhibitors of change, right? And I'm luckily, I am very unpractical, so big tick in that box.
Yeah, well done.
And uncertainty doesn't bother me. I much prefer risk than status quo. Like, I am jump 2 feet in kind of guy. Again, this is not advocacy for that behavior, but it's mine. So I'm predisposed, I think, after a certain point of learning, of personal development, it became an obvious thing. And it happened. I can tell you when it happened, because I was working on a brand and story strategy for a client in Derbyshire, an amazing consultancy who do purposeful transformations of organizations. So these guys have worked for like Alibaba and Mars and YLeader, big like brands that we know, right? But they had in their work of purpose-driven transformation. Now, we all know what purpose is, right? Simon Sinek wanked about it. Every other marketer talks about it. Like, whatever you think purpose is, that thing. But they used some very interesting tools, and they did a transformation program for individuals that they were rolling out. Right, because they did corporate offer, but they wanted to do it for individual, like entrepreneurs and leaders and stuff. So this was the first time they rolled it out, and I did it, and it was called Shifted, and it lasted 12 months. It wasn't continual for 12 months. There was check-ins, and you had to do personal work for 6 months and stuff. But it was using things that were so far out of my wheelhouse, like native people's wisdom. Like, we had a fire ceremony. I had to get a piece of string, which I've still got actually, tie one end to a rock, one end to a stick, and a knot to represent every major point in my life. So overall, you can see where there's most major points happening, and then you can look back at it. It's quite like super interesting. But then there's one called Constellations, which is looking back at your ancestry and your family. And as I said, my mum died when I was 18, so, and our family wasn't super. So I really struggled with that, if I'm honest, because I was like, I don't know. I don't have any thoughts about it. Like, I don't have any traumas. Like, we just went around on our lives. I don't really, do you know, like, I really struggled with that. But these are all just tools to help you become aware, like we've said, right, to notice this thing, to figure out what it was. And the end of the end of this 12-month ceremony, you came out with a statement, right? And a statement, it was, I can't remember what it was called now, sorry, shifted people, like a statement of intent. That wasn't the title of it, but it had a nice title, just can't remember it. But, and mine was to be free to explore. Right. And this acts as like your inner compass, where it, so it helps you make decisions. So when you're faced with a fork in the road, or shall I do this or this, which happens, right, especially as we develop through life, or what's the right thing to do here, left or right, right, you can refer to this thing that you have, this tool, this statement of be free to explore, knowing all the work and the thinking that's gone into it. So it's your tool, right? You've crafted this tool. Right. And it'll help you make better decisions, because that's all these tools are, like putting my marketing hat back on, like a brand purpose, like a vision statement, values, all of these things that we have, right, to add meaning to the work or the people that we are. Right. They're just tools for us to use. Our job is to understand which is the right tool for us. And your tool will be different than my tool, and the people listening will have different tools. Like, there's no right or wrong. But I do think it's our opportunity and our responsibility to pick good tools, pick the right tool for the work we need, right?
Yeah, because I think there's a really interesting point. At the start of kind of that, you talked about actually you've been in a spot where, you know, very, very kind of happily, your life is all right. Everything's good. And I think I do think as part of that, this is that all rightness, that contentness, I suppose, is actually, again, wrong phraseology, is part of the problem, part of the cause of this lostness. Because, you know, we know pain changes behaviors, you know, kind of, you know, fight and flight, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's that. And I think actually that all okayness actually helps to maintain the status quo. And actually almost prevents people from kind of getting that clarity that you've talked about, that actually you'd gone through, you know, by accident almost, and I'm paraphrasing here, you were doing a work thing. That work thing kind of led you into another work thing, which is a completely obvious next step to what you were doing. And it's only by going through that you had then have that accidental clarity of, oh, shit. Okay, there might be more here. Like, or maybe, was it, or is it there might be more, or is it, it wasn't enough.
Like, this is not the only thing, right? I think there is never a black and white switch of this is what's happened, this is why, right? I think there's always a culmination or a combination of things. So that shifted ceremony came on the back of, I'm not doing marketing, I want to do brand and purpose for things that like a impacty work. And then I did the shifted ceremony, and then we had 2 years off through the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right. So I had just time to go,
yeah,
what should I do now? Do you know what? Like, so a combination of it, why it was such a short time frame for me, why the change was, I'm definitely like, because I could make a choice because we weren't doing anything. The client world had shut down a little bit. I was like, I don't want to do any of that. I'm just going to do this. Like, and you don't usually get that opportunity, right? You don't have that space, which is why I think creating space is important for people who are searching for an answer to this what's next question.
Yeah.
Right. You have to give yourself space, not a pandemic, not a lockdown ideally, but so like maybe a day a week, you know, that sort of thing. But you mentioned something interesting there as well that brought a phrase to mind of a mate of mine, Mark Shaler, who is a sustainability punk consultant, coach, something like that. But
job.
he always says in his talks, change happens at the edges. I don't know what it means, but it's true. Right. And it does. Like, if you imagine your world, your ecosystem, like everything within it is a box, right? You draw it on a piece of paper, right? The only thing that stands out is that edge, the line of the box, right? And that's where change happens, because you're always on the cusp of something,
yeah,
or the cusp of staying or doing something different or breaking the boundaries. And I think the work, the hardest bit of work, is taking a step out of the middle to the edge. I'm not saying do something different. I'm not saying jump off the edge, right? Metaphorically, but we should definitely spend some time on the edge, because that's where change happens, and change is what we're for. Like, we're amazing at it as humans, because like the change, like the technological, you've all seen those diagrams of how it's gone from caveman to Teslas, like super quick we've done.
Yeah.
Like, we're good at it. We're good at change. We're creative things.
Yeah. Do you think I'm definitely an advocate of that first step, like the hardness of the first step. And I get sort of that joy in the hardness of the first step. And actually, I think there is a thing there. I wonder, in part of this, and I don't know, because it's, I'm sort of in that, is actually the hardest step being able to realize that there's more, or or you've had less. And again, I'm not, yeah, I don't quite know about that. Because I think, I'm not unhappy. I got a great life, but something did cause me to want to do more, want, or perhaps do different. Maybe it was different, not more. And I suppose, yeah, I wonder
more,
if
more is a fallacy. Like, the way, like, subtraction is a way to growth. Like, doing less of something, giving you more space so you can focus on other stuff. Like, doing more stuff is, I would say, almost 100% never the answer. Like, just gives you more stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So, what you need is space, right? And an experience and a clarity around it, which is, to me, feels like less.
Yeah. I suppose it is. It's more, less, but it's, for me, it still comes back to that different.
Yeah.
I wanted to do, and again, this is where you get into it, I wanted to do more with the time that I've got. Now, actually, yeah, of course, there is, to be able to do that, you've got to free up the time to do less. And it is, because, I think there's, and again, hopefully we'll find something this journey. I'm interested to find out whether people, blokes, are in their, in their kind of their midnight thoughts, aware that they want more or want less or want different. It's interesting.
This is like, if we were to stage it out, like in a good old fashioned stage gating marketing plan, right? Get from beginning to stage one, to stage two, right? This sort of analogy, right? First one is awareness. Like, I love learning, right? I've looked at this from kind of Buddhist perspective. I've looked at it from like cheesy American $1 million coach perspective. I've looked at it from different things, right? So I'm not a practitioner of one model. I like the variety sort of thing, but you can call it being awoken, right? You can call it being personal awareness. It can be some, Ryan Holiday's just done an amazing book. Well, not just done one, but I've just read it, called Stillness is the Key, and stillness is a thing.
Yeah.
Like, gives you this perspective. But whatever that looks like for you, whatever tools you can use to do that, you need to first be aware that other perspectives exist, and then go, I wonder what my life looks like from that perspective. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that, the first stage is whatever awareness looks like. Let's call it awareness for sake of ease.
It's something, some moment in their world to think, oh, I wish I could do that, or I did, or that looks interesting. And
yeah, like, there's some good questions that I use in my role as a mentor that are not directly designed to answer that, but to prompt that thought. So What would you do differently if time and money were no object is one of them. Right. What would you do differently if time and energy were no object? There's a similar one of going, what would you start doing tomorrow if you knew you couldn't fail? It's a good one.
Yeah.
But questions, I won't go through all of it, but questions that prompt, that go, oh, like that cause you to question the things that you know, that question everything. I'm not saying, again, I don't see any of this personal development change thing as a negative, right? And I know personally people who think change is negative, right? It comes with baggage for some people.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
People associate change and loss a lot, whereas I'm the other side of that. I'm like, oh, cool, what's over there? Let's go poke that box. Amazing.
Yeah.
Like it's all opportunity for me. So I know, like, my view is not perfect, mm-hmm. but neither is theirs, right? It's probably somewhere in between.
Yeah. As ever, it's always that combination of all. I remember asking a business owner who was fairly new into business, and I asked him, because he was, do I want to do it? Do I not? I said, well, look, if you knew you had 5 years left to live, would you still be doing what you're doing now?
Yeah.
And actually, that was quite a revelatory thing to him. And I put it back on myself. And that was a bit that. And the problem with that, as soon as you start to talk about death, is everyone's like, well, no, because I would give up everything. I'd sell the house and I'd go and live there. And they aren't actually real things, because, you know, there's that kind of that weight with that. But I think actually to have that, if you start to apply that to each part of your life, actually, if I knew that, would I be using my free time for this? Would I be using that? Would I be putting up with this feeling of not quite great, or knowing that there's always a bit? And again, I know it's more or less, but I, you know, there's always a bit more I could do. You know, I like to. I'm not always good at it. I like to try and rip the arse out of life. And I forget who said that to me once. I can remember I was really young. And I don't know, I can't remember. Anyway, but it was one of these phrases that, again, I was at the time, I was like, you think, but it's kind of come back to it. Yeah, just do it. Fill your time. You know, I can think of, like, one guy, a really good friend of mine, growing up, you know, he's really good at this. Really, really good at this. Of course, the downside is he's late for everything and it drives me mad. But, you know, he would be the guy that would just be, like, we'd arrange to meet at 8 for a beer, and at 10 minutes later, I text him, hello, mate, where are you? And he's like, I'm just going to the gym. I'm like, well, but we're meeting at 8. He's like, yeah, I'll still be there. I'm like, well, no, you won't, mate, because you're going to do an hour in the gym and you're 45 minutes away on a train. But he filled his time. And I think there's that.
I know people like that.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think, you know, there is that part of it, I think, you know, where you have to do it. And it's, yeah, I think you're right. It's, you know, that awareness. And I suppose, hopefully, I don't know, I don't want to get above our station. This is something that people that might listen to this might help them to kind of just ask themselves that first question. Because I don't think it's everyone, you know, well, probably everyone to an extent, but it's not everyone. There are some people doing it, but it's that, you know, if you can just help people think, look, is this really what I want? Is it, you know, or could I want more?
See,
and it's tricky because actually, you know, I've got, you know, dream house, dream life, kids, love, family, home, living in Sweden. Like, I've got all sorts of brilliant stuff going on, but I've always got that. Look, what else? What else?
See, I think, I'm not a big fan of this guy, but Stephen Bartlett has a really good
tool
for this. But he says, rather than, like, because when new opportunities and shiny things come along, and or you ask the question of, you know, if you only had 5 years left to live, what are you doing? People go, oh, I live on a boat.
Yeah.
Right? He always goes, well, ask a version of it, something like, well, if the opportunity arises, would I do it tomorrow? And that usually filters out, well, no, I wouldn't do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
chilly out there.
I kind of have to, you know. But, like, so, well, you don't really want to then. Is his point. Like, if you wouldn't do it, given the opportunity and the freedom to tomorrow, then it's not really a thing. Do you know what I mean? So, and that changes. So I don't think this change that we're talking about, this what's nextness, this looking for more, better, different stuff is we will come across a big shiny red button and go, amazing, there it is, boom, different.
Yeah.
I think it's a practice, a bit like yoga, right? You do it daily, you can't get it wrong, you just keep going.
Yeah.
Like breath work. I think
yeah,
you should have whatever works for you. You should have a percentage of your week, month, day looking at this. And like, yeah, no constraints or preconceptions of what is the right amount of time. It's your life, you can figure it out. Like, there's no right or wrong, but I do think creating that space is the way. Yeah. Like, because if you don't,
yes,
you're like your mate, you will fill your time in, it's not there. Like, and the only way that's going to happen, right, is if, like, I think we've mentioned this in our conversations before, but like, you have to choose your difficult, you have to choose your challenge, or it chooses you, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
nicest possible way, men around this age, right, it's gonna usually be some kind of health, either personally or people near you, thing that makes you go shit.
Yeah.
Sorry for swearing.
Yes.
Right, like we alluded to, that my dad passed away. He was super old. He was 83. Like, good life, fine. But that was a new perspective on life for me, like looking at that, because he had a number of ailments that made him deteriorate and yeah, become dependent. And I'm there going, yes, of course, I love him, my dad. I don't want anything. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, not only my dad. Like, I wouldn't wish that experience on them, but I wouldn't. Like, I'm like, I need to do stuff that makes me not dependent or deteriorate. Like, I am driven to do that. And I've always, you know, since taking up running, I've become plant-based. I'm much healthier than I am. I'm 13 and a half stone instead of 17 and a half stone. Like, it's like, things are better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I have, like, he had macular degeneration. I'm going, well, that's hereditary. Like, if I had an eye test yesterday, don't have any signs of it yet. Doesn't mean it's not coming. I'm like, well, all the things I do, like, involve my eyes. What am I going to do if that happens? Like, what do I need to do today?
And I think you are right on this. I think there's a bit of the whole kind of diet principle here that I have no basis for this at all, but I'm always concerned, or not concerned. I was like, kind of like, people that like want to lose weight and they diet, and you think, well, like, and yes, so can work and all sorts of things, but it's a change of lifestyle. You know, I remember, you know, we watched, I don't know, a body
it's
coach.
It's in here.
Yeah.
Not here.
Do I mean the body coach?
Yeah, Joe Wicks.
Yeah, so what age is, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And actually, he does that thing where you take a picture of you, of people in your pants, and then weirdly they post it on social, strange world. It's a bit like when the people go, what's that TV show where people have got these weird ailments? Instead of going to a doctor, they go to a TV show.
Oh, yeah, I know what, I don't know what the title like, is, but I know the one.
But yeah, it's like that. And yeah, so I did it because I was, you know, I did a bit of exercise, but not a lot. And actually, I took some photos in my pants. I'm just like, okay. And it was never particularly a weight thing. It was like a body shape thing. Actually, I'm starting to look old. And actually, I look at that. And since that day, I do vastly more exercise. I eat better. Now, I'm not, you know, not perfect, still like all the wrong things, but it's a change of lifestyle rather than a thing. And I think that's what we're talking about here. I think there is a change in lifestyle. And I think, yeah, whatever that trigger is, that was more kind of thing. Well, actually, I really noticed, weird as it sounds, like my back, my elbows, I just looked a bit flabby. And I thought, okay, look, that's a change of it. And I think, you know, there is that, we are, again, it is that age thing. Like dad, so my dad died a while back, not, you know, oh, where are we now, a year or two, year and a half or so. And, you know, he had Alzheimer's. And he died with that, and my aunt died with that, and my grandma died with that, and probably. So it's not too much of a leap to suggest that might be my way out too. I don't know. I'm not wishing it. Again, I'm not in any way sort of, you know, kind of
medically like
something will get me. You know, one of the very few truths of life, at some point your number's up, and you know, and it's not, it doesn't take much of my brain capacity. But there is that thing there. And actually think, well, like, I may as well do stuff. You know, I can see a way out. I don't think about it. But so I do the stuff and I change the stuff. And this is where you kind of into that. It has to be this, you know, once you have realized that there could be more, whether that's a trigger or, you know, whether that's, you know, motion towards or motion away from, like whatever that is, actually, you know, I want more from life or I'm worried about X. It has to be that change. And that, as you said, therefore, probably for most people, it has to be about, I'm going to make time.
And I think...
whatever.
Yeah, time is definitely the tool. Time and space is definitely the tool you need to do that.
Yeah.
Right. I've been thinking, and I'm still thinking about it. This isn't a sidelining topic, but I think it's something to do with it, and it's something I'm scribbling on and reading about. But choice. I'm really interested in people's decisions and choices, right? And I think we all have the ability to make better choices, which is the lifestyle thing.
Yeah.
Like, because whatever we do, everything we do, right, we go, like, you might go, oh, I have to do that. Technically, we live in a Western world. We really don't. Like we can choose, right? It's, some of the choices are harder, but, like, I think if we get better at decisions and choices, like, whatever that inner strength looks like, or that thing for me, the statement, the be free to explore helps me, the inner compass helps me make better decisions directionally, right? If we get better at choices, I think it's interesting, but I'm thinking on that, maybe we'll podcast in a few months when I've figured something out about choices. But I think what you're saying, absolutely right, about better lifestyle is making better choices. Like, it's simple as that. Like, because everybody... on the face of it, if you go, would you like you and your family to be healthier for longer? They're going to go, yeah. Like, no, there's no weird people out there going, actually, to do with those two nipping off a little earlier. Like, well, maybe. But the people on this podcast will be fine. Like, people are going to go, yeah. And they go, oh, cool. Well, what are you going to change? And they go, what? No, I'm not changing anything. It was just a wish, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so how do we make the wish a choice or a decision? Like, I don't know what the answer is. It's a rhetorical question of thing I'm thinking about. But I think that's in there somewhere, right?
Sorry. So on that, though, I think what's interesting for me is that you turn to running.
Yes.
And I wonder, you know, why you turned to running. You know, was it because it was something so very different from the life you had? You know, I don't know how long I've known you now, but I don't remember you being particularly physically healthy. You weren't unhealthy. I don't remember you doing that pre when you did it. So do you think it was because it was so different, or was it that you thought, I don't know, I need to start with getting my body to a point where I can do more hard stuff?
Like, it's kind of weirdly always been there. However, yes, you're 100% right. The whole middle of my life, it definitely wasn't.
Feels like right.
So up to 18 years of age, I ran like miles and half marathons for school and county and stuff. Because my dad was a good runner. Like, my dad, best London Marathon PR was 2:46 at the age of 58, believe it or not. Like, mental runner.
That'll do.
Yeah, really good. I did try and briefly beat that earlier this year and realise I can't. So that's fine. By about an hour. Well done, Dad. High five. But, like, it's always been there. But at 18, my mum died and I was faced with the choice and the decision to go, right, do I go on to uni or not? And I went, and I'm very keen on academic stuff. I'm going, and then lived in Ibiza till I was 22.
five years of hard graft, that, my friend.
Yeah. So that was a different health spectrum.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's say. And that fun party time, alcohol driven human continues until I was, I don't know, what am I now? 46, 42, 43? And it wasn't wise because the things that my hereditary, my mum died of kidney disease, my dad had kidney disease, he also had heart failure, he also had macular degeneration. Like everything excessive alcohol consumption leads to. And I'm currently, like, as of newsflash for the podcast, trying to give up alcohol. I contacted Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't drink every day. I'm not, as you'd picture an alcoholic, because I picture an alcoholic, but it's something I struggle with and I drink too much. So I'm seeking help for that. Everything's all right, totally functional, still running 70K a week. I just need to get rid of it and I can't do it on my own. But it's always kind of been there. Do you know what I mean? And it was a combination of a thing. A good friend of mine, my breath work instructor and coach friend, Matt Bagwell, did an amazing challenge in 2021 called Run the Country Ultra for Calm, the campaign against living miserably, because as he was then 51, but in his 40s, as I don't know the stats, but as many people do, had suicidal thoughts, faced with this change, wasn't enough, wasn't happy, divorce, kids, things, and Calm saved his life. So we formed a little community and we ran. He ran all 21 ultras in September. I didn't. I ran two for that because that's his thing. And, you know, we didn't mention that, but, you know, there's definitely been, I know people who are not with us now because of the same reason, which is the hardest thing. Like, so the hardest thing to figure out, because everybody's, I don't know anybody who's sad. You know what I mean? But that was again the catalyst. It gave me something to train for over pandemic. And I went from not running the 2.5 mile loop around my house without walking it to within 6 months doing 250K, which was cool.
Yeah, and to almost kind of bring all this together, my kind of thought, my estimation is that actually it is the connect, it is the doing of something different. You know, I'm kind of calling
You
it as
need a vehicle of change, right? A vehicle of change, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's two things for me. If you know, if it's like me and everyone's very different, for me it is that adventure. You know, I like to go and swim in cold places. I like outdoor swimming. I like, you know, I tell you what, I'm going to go and do 100 miles in, through the middle of the night, just because, kind of, why not? It's like something different. And actually, as I've kind of gone down this trail with all of this, is actually, I think the answer, which is the wrong way of putting it, but kind of a very kind of glib phrase, like the, you know, a point that can help move forward is people doing adventurous things. And I don't mean that, as I said before, about, you know, going to cross the Sahara. It is taking a curry and going to sit in the woods and eat it.
It's in
It,
reference to their life, right?
yeah.
What's adventurous compared to what your status quo is? Do
Yeah,
that.
go back to a thing that you loved. And that's really interesting that you actually, I thought it was something new, but it was going back to something. And again, so that'll be a thing. And I think that's the my point is that actually, if people, blokes, can do to connect with something adventurous, and again, I need to try and find a different way with it, because that may well be, I don't know, picking up a musical instrument for the first time ever. Or actually, you know, perhaps it's actually almost finding that discomfort. We talked about actually one of the drivers for this is contentment. And again, you know, I mean, and you know, kind of, and I feel I feel awkward here because actually there are so many people that would love contentment. I have such a difficult time,
100%.
you know, and I think there's that, but I think, you know, if you can find something that almost, you know, drives some level of discomfort, learning something new, doing something new, revisiting something. You know, for me, it's very outdoorsy, and I'm learning a lot as I do this at various different things about this connection with the outdoors and actually that driving happiness. And I think, you know, kind of going into that. And I think, you know, for me, if I look at this, and it's interesting what you say there, it feels like the, you know, this thing that we set out to discuss is there a thing that it is a thing, and that connection to help you is doing that thing that is uncomfortable, that is not within your current circle of, but not just comfort, but day-to-day activity. Because, you know, we're all busy. Now I'm a husband, I'm a dad, and I do most of the kind of childcare stuff and all that sort of stuff, and family and mum and all that. There's a lot there. But I think, you know, if you can find something that takes you out of your day-to-day and takes you out of your sphere of comfort, that adventurous step out is, you know, getting out to the edges where, where the change or whether the contentment or the recontentment or whatever it is happens.
Yeah, I 100% agree. There's like the same thing for me, like something challenging. Like, and sometimes for me, challenging is going out for a 40-minute run in the rain because I don't want to do that. Like, and sometimes it's running for 12 hours. Like, it changes, right? Yeah. But I'm an advocate of challenge or adventure or difficult or whatever, right? And for me, the vehicle is movement. My chosen movement is running.
Yeah.
But Rich Roll, Andrew Huberman, podcast gods, who I'm sure you will emulate this time next year.
Yes.
Have long, the many, 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 many hours of episodes basically saying mood follows action. Right, you take action first, your mood gets better.
Yeah.
Right, you feel better. And it's all I'm trying to do, like it's the first thing in my calendar now because I know how important that is. Like I know how I feel without that stuff. I know it makes me better at being a dad, partner, teacher, learner. Like without that, I'm all over the place, right? Without that, my default is maybe I'll just have a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
I don't go to McDonald's. I was going to say McDonald's, but I don't go to McDonald's. I've not had McDonald's in like 5 years. But, you know, cake shop or something. I need that, right? And I think finding that is such a tool, such a good tool.
Yes. Thank you, mate. That's, that's... It's really interesting. I think, mate, let's leave it there. That has been absolutely fascinating, mate. I feel like I've learned some stuff, and there's definitely something that's sort of coming together here. So,
there is.
Mate, thank you. I genuinely appreciate your time, and yeah, I hope folks have enjoyed that, and we'll catch up with people next time.